This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast where we discuss the themes driving markets and the economy today and in the future. On today's show, we dive into the credit markets. We discuss the impacts of Central Bank's Rescue Act.
Central banks did a great job sort of saving the party over the last few months, but the system is on life support.
The parts of the credit market that's driving investors towards.
There's a hunt for yield, so it's people will be pushed into high yield market, will be pushed into emerging markets.
And the themes investors should be looking out for.
On the other end, it's airlines, hotels, restaurants. Yeah. All of these are still trading with a pretty huge premium, and for a reason. Most of them are on life support.
Hello, how are you? I hope you're all safe and well. Welcome to the show. You, like me, like most investors, are probably on the hunt for yield. As central banks around the globe continue to cut their interest rates to help keep economies alive amid the pandemic, yields across many other asset classes have fallen. I mean, for instance, government bonds in most developed economies and in Asia are either extremely low or in some cases in negative territory. I mean, think about it, you paying them for them to borrow money from you. Absolutely crazy. Most investors will have resorted to the stock market, hoping to use dividends as a source of yield to boost their income. Even there, though, there is uncertainty. Many companies have either had to cut their dividends amid collapsing revenues or been forced to cut them by regulators to preserve their balance sheets. So where else can you look? Global corporate bonds, or credits, as they're also referred to, have been proven popular. I mean, especially given the low yields we've been talking about on government bonds, the dividend cuts on equities. It's a huge market. If you have a pension, you'll undoubtedly have exposure to the credit markets in some fashion. And similarly, if you own certain types of index trackers. Like stocks, there are certain parts of the credit market that perform better than others since the pandemic began, deeply affected by fiscal and monetary policy. With me today to walk us through the world of credit, its reaction to COVID, its risks and rewards, and future themes we should be keeping an eye on is Julien Houdin. He's a deputy head of global credit at Schroders. Julien, it's the first time we've spoken. How have you been keeping?
Well, it's fair to say it's been a busy year so far, especially first year at Schroders, so not really busy. I think we've seen a lot of rules have changed, and actually, if we look at the long term of the market dynamics and what central banks have been doing, actually everything has accelerated in the last few months. So obviously for us, it has been a challenging environment, but we've been working hard to adjust to the new normal, I would say.
Yes, it's been challenging for a lot of people. Where are we speaking to you from today?
Well, I'm actually in London, working from home and making myself back in the office from time to time and try to get organized with the team. I think like in a lot of other financial firms, but a lot of other companies are on the same trend at the moment.
Have you been keen to get back to the office, or have things been working fairly well from home?
No, we have to say, I guess we've seen this comment many times. If this would have happened even only 3, maybe 5 years ago, would have been a disaster. I think we are, with the fiber and communication have been, pretty good. And I'm amazed how we all kept very well within the team, but as well within the firm, and communication has been a very high level. So it has been working very well in terms of productivity for the team.
And it's helped us do stuff like this, these podcasts. So in the first part of the show, we're going to look at the credit investors' take on the story so far, and there are some fascinating insights.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So, Julian, you spent a good bit of time trying to understand the implications of the current macro conditions. So we're talking about the fiscal and monetary policy for credit. Could you perhaps walk us through some of the current monetary and fiscal policy regimes and the implications that you believe that investors should be considering?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been years. We are in a very tough environment from a macro perspective and on a global growth perspective as well. We've seen central banks, you know, across the globe, pumping more and more money over the years into the system. I think we really struggle to understand the transmission mechanism. So how this money gets effective for the for the day-to-day economy, for the real economy, and we've seen a lot of this money is actually stays stuck on banks' reserve, basically, and there's not that much filtering through the economy. So the multiplier is low and is getting lower and lower, as we've seen, with very low level of GDP across the region.
I was looking at a stat. It was 1.4 billion central bank asset purchases every hour since COVID-19 in March. I mean, that seems astonishing.
Yes, that's what just about to say. The system was already very fragile, you know, with too much debt, a lot of deficits from government, big deficits, and obviously the more longer term demographics playing deflationary forces. And what we are seeing is that with this COVID and pandemic, everything has accelerated, and we are in a very tough situation. And central banks did a great job, you know, sort of saving the party over the last few months, but the system is on life support. So now we are seeing, you know, fiscal measure coming from government, and it is fairly new. So we've seen something more directed toward the corporates and furlough schemes in Europe, something more. That looks like more helicopter money in the US, and it's the same kind of life support as well. So it's a very difficult environment, and to judge where we are going to be in 6 months' time, you know, assumptions we have to make are pretty wide, basically.
Yeah, I was reading that I think Germany have extended their furlough scheme at least to the end of 2021. And I'm reading the papers today. It looks like there's going to be more pressure on the UK government to, when the furlough scheme ends here, to have something as a backup. I mean, do you see that being as a ripple effect across all nations?
Yeah, I think Europe is in sort of a better place from a social perspective. So everything that is fiscal and extending the furlough scheme will happen in Europe. In the UK, I think we will know soon. They want to stop it next month, so that might create problem and volatility in certain part of the market. I'm much more worried about the US, because we know that the US they stop, you know, sending checks to people end of July, and we start to see the negative effect on consumption and confidence. And I guess with the election coming, there's kind of a mind game between Republican and Democrats. And it's fair to say that the probability of nothing being done in the coming weeks and months is getting higher. And that might derail the recovery that we are seeing at the moment, although it's an artificial recovery, as I said, as all parts of the economy are on life support. But if we derail that by not enough fiscal impulse, we might see volatility in the coming months coming from the US market.
And I mean, another stat that I've seen: 258 trillion is the size of global debt. That's 280% of global GDP. That's a record high. It almost seems it can't go much further, but yet governments and central banks keep pushing it.
So yeah, I think never say never with in macroeconomy. I mean, 5-6 years ago, we would have talked about negative rates and helicopter money. We would have sounded like fantasy. But we've got a problem of, you know, too much debt in the system, as you said, and we can't. Debt is not a bad thing if you can create the growth that is associated to it. It's just we haven't been able, you know, globally to create that growth, and it's a bit the trap we are in at the moment, and anything that accelerates this problem obviously derail from a trend that was already a sub trend in terms of growth. So makes life very difficult for everybody. And the only solution we have is to pump more debt into the system. So that's a challenge that we're all in.
You were talking about the concerns from the US. There's the fiscal cliff. I just wondered if you could just briefly explain what the fiscal cliff is and why it could be a big worry.
Well, it's very simple in the US. You're sending checks of $600 a week to a major part of the population. 25% of the disposable income is coming from the government. And suddenly you stop that. So that means that roughly 30 million people that were really borderline in terms of income and debt level are going to struggle to pay, the rent, to pay the mortgage, to pay, for the their day-to-day life. And we start to see this in the numbers coming from the US. So we had pretty strong macro data, a strong recovery, but this money was coming from the, from the government or low interest rate created by central banks. And now, if we stop that, obviously there's a hole, and there's nothing to plug that hole at the moment.
Yeah, 25% of personal income being derived from government support seems huge, but yet at the moment we're not seeing inflation, which maybe in other times had governments have done this, we would have seen, because obviously demand for goods would have gone up. But it seems like people might be hoarding money instead of actually spending it. But what's the inflation outlook looking like?
Yeah, for. To see inflation, you need a lot of things to come together, and you will have to see more, fiscal stimulus, continuation of very low interest rates from the central bank, and confidence coming from the consumer perspective that would have to spend their savings, in some part of the population, savings have increased, dramatically. I'm talking about my country, France, for example. We are talking about $85 billion that gone into savings. So what is the consumer is going to do with the savings? It's all linked about confidence. If you think you're going to lose your job when the furlough scheme are going to stop, or you're going to have wage pressure, obviously, then you're not keen to spend. And I think that's what is happening and what we're working on. Try to understand how consumption will start, and it's all about the confidence.
And what other implications might that have on the thing about on spreads in particular?
So that's the difficult question. So, and I think so there's two things there. There's the market, the market consensus, which I think is understand perfectly the dynamic there of what I've just talked about, the fiscal cliff and the uncertainty about the fiscal measure. But the market is very confident is that if this fiscal stimulus fades or stops, basically, that central banks will be behind the scene, will do a lot more. And for credit spread, that might mean that things are getting worse from a global perspective, but actually credit spread might continue to see some positive technical, because central banks will pump even more money into the system, or might buy directly some part of the market that could be, as we know, the investment grade market, but they can extend to high yield, they can extend to equity. We saw that in Japan years ago, so why not doing that? So I think that's the confidence that the market is giving to central banks.
Which means taking a little bit more risk. So that's the background of what's going on. In the next section of the show, we're going to look at how credit investors might navigate this uncertain world and the potential risks and opportunities.
Get in touch with us by email at schroederspodcasts@schroeders.com or visit our website, schroeders.com/investor download.
So, Julian, thinking specifically about the implications of those lower returns we were just talking about, how do you think investors can navigate this market?
Yeah, well, you have to be. There's one thing that can maybe change the market on the shorter term is would be the announcement of a vaccine, but nevertheless, this will have that can lead to different effects and some current winners can become losers. But overall, you know, there's a hunt for yield. So it's people will be pushed into high yield market, will be pushed into emerging market. Really, the important thing is to find this part of the market that will suffer the less in case of a downturn. So within investment grade, I think, as I said in the previous section, Europe, the confidence around the fiscal measure, the furlough scheme, will be higher in the US. So I think investment grade, the European market in investment grade will be safer, and we'll see less volatility than the US investment grade for the months to come.
So investment grade debt, we're talking about higher quality companies. This is the higher quality part of the credit market, but it spans quite a big risk spectrum. So at the top end, you've got the AAAs, which effectively means they're pretty much on par with government debt. On the other hand, you've got the BBBs, the lowest investment grade rating bracket, and they can be seen as a fair bit riskier. And there's always the question of whether they'll be downgraded to BB and as such become just high yield.
And then we go into the high yielding part of the market, and then you need to do the work, you know, almost company by company, sector by sector, as there's still a lot of dispersion in this part of the market. So value will be relatively expensive in some part of the market and relatively cheap in other part of the market with the risk associated to it. Emerging market is more interesting. There's still some value there, but obviously they are not in the best position, especially if we see a downturn from here. You know, we like some corporates in Brazil, Mexico. What's interesting is Asia and China in particular. We know, you know, they manage the COVID story much better than Europe and the US. Yields are still relatively high there, and there's a fair amount of value in the high yield market in this country. So an allocation there makes sense. Knowing as well a global reflation, it is what we need, and the global reflation will start from Asia and from China in particular. So if we see more green lights about global growth, China will need to be part of it, and hence this part of the market will has to benefit as well.
I was interested actually when you mentioned Brazil, obviously politically a little bit unstable there, and the COVID situation is a little bit troubling. How difficult is it for you to start picking out the winners and losers within individual countries such as Brazil?
I think the most important thing, I think, with Brazil is that their external debt, so the debt in dollar term, in US dollar term, is still pretty low. So that gives us confidence as well to invest directly in the in the dollar debt of the country on top of certain corporates. But as I said, the valuation needs to be there. It was there back in May and June, and this valuation is becoming a bit more challenging at the moment. That's why, you know, our capital tends to be deployed more in Asia versus Latin America at the moment.
Interesting. Obviously, you mentioned dollar debt there. Dollar's been strong over the last few years. Do you see a potentially weakening in the dollar then that could help some of these countries that have higher dollar debt than others?
Yeah, this has. I mean, this is happening and has happened. And the dollar has been, you know, pretty weak this year. And obviously, it's another strong technical for emerging market debt. But you know, let's be careful. If market sentiment turn, the dollar can still be seen as a safe haven, as we've seen in most of market correction in the past. So, and this could have a pretty dramatic effect on emerging market debt. So, what we lack and what we lack Asia is that we in the past, you know, these markets even in stress period have been a lot less volatile, and we've seen a lot less default there. So we are, given where the dollar trades, we are a bit more confident going into Asia than LATAM or other part of emerging market at the moment.
Yeah, so you wouldn't be quite throwing all your chips behind dollar weakness just yet.
Yes, and I mean, there's going to be another story with the dollar is where it trades versus the euro, you know. And if the ECB is pushed to do more, you know, because of the exchange rate. I know they're saying they are not targeting the exchange rate, but in fact, you know, euro dollar at 120 is a huge headwind for the European economy. So, of course, this will push, you know, the ECB to do more, and that might make the dollar stronger. So there's a lot of a lot of different derivatives in the in what we're seeing on the currency side.
So those are the broad issues affecting credit investing. In the final section, we're going to drill down to the sector and stock level to highlight some of the themes credit investors should be considering. Let's start with the ripple effects of quantitative easing. That's central banks buying debt to drive down lending rates. It's been exacerbated during the pandemic and looks likely to continue for a while yet as economies try to recover. Low interest rates in particular could be good for residential real estate. And as we have seen in the UK, banks who issue mortgages have been doing a roaring trade since the end of lockdown. But where else should investors be focused?
I think digitalization has been there for a while. Online retail, online retailing, you know, we've seen some nice stories in the UK. Of retailer that were quite advanced there. Well, actually, I'm saying retailers. I'm seeing one retailer in particular that is doing very well. Around this, there was a logistics streaming platform as well. So obviously, with the COVID, have accelerated dramatically and benefited as well. I think ESG is extremely important. A lot of companies now are issuing green bonds.
You've mentioned ESG being a theme. Perhaps for those that don't know what ESG is, it stands for environmental, social and governance. And investors are analysing companies more and more for those factors. The theory being that the better the companies rate on ESG, the more successful they could be in the long run. Plenty of industries face challenges along the road when it comes to ESG. The oil industry is the obvious example, but also tobacco firms. What is your take on that sector?
Tobacco has been a big story as well. You get relatively high returns from tobacco, and you need to think about this sector, you know, and how it's going to trade and what is going to be the trend over the years, and how this company will be able to refinance if we see. If we see a huge impact on the ESG through to portfolios. And for the rest, I mean, where the valuation is at the moment, and I mentioned this granularity within and across markets is everything that is linked directly to the COVID and the recovery. So there's the consumer, there's obviously everything that is linked to tourism and leisure. And you can see a huge significant pickup in terms of spread. So in Europe, it's probably 50 basis points still of being invested in COVID names compared to the rest of the market. And in the US, we're talking about 100 basis points of premium for COVID linked names. So no, Netflix is doing very well. On the other end, it's, you know, airlines, hotel, restaurants. Yeah. All of these are still trading with a pretty huge premium, and for a reason, you know, most of them are on life support basically. So, yeah, the themes that we're exploring is obviously, you know, the work from home, what's going on with the travel, and mainly maybe a bit less tourism. It's a bit more obvious, but more around the business travel and how it's going to evolve in the future. The impact on airlines, the impact on hotels. That's I think it is key to understand these trends, because life won't be back to what it was before in these sectors. So a lot of work on this. And at the moment, you know, we have preferred maybe the platform when you can book, you know, trips rather than going directly into airlines or hotel chain or restaurants. So we need to be convinced there first of all about, you know, the evolution of the pandemic, but as well about what the consumer is going to do as well.
So as Julian said, it seems like it will take a long time to get back to normal, if in fact it ever does. So investors need to be judicious. There are clearly opportunities in the cheaper COVID hit parts of the market, such as Brazil and Mexico at the country level, or retailers and travel firms at the sector level. But you need to be careful, particularly with credit yields. Remember, high yields, while attractive, are high for a reason. They carry greater risk of default. But don't be scared. There are plenty of opportunities out there. And hopefully we've given you some ideas of where to look if you're interested in the world of credit. That was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to read more about any of the subjects we've spoken about in these shows, go to schroders.com/insights. You can listen to a whole back catalogue at schroders.com/the investor download. If you want to get in touch with us, it's schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Feel free to pose any questions. And if you want to rate, review and subscribe to us, you can do that via Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, with new shows available on a Monday and Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. But most importantly, keep safe and go well. Cheers.